Hello, I hope you're having a great day. Welcome to Admissions Straight Talk, a podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you can high-five the person next to you and shout, "Yes, I'm in." Now, the MBA admissions cycle, like sports seasons, and regrettably sometimes my waistline, is expanding. It's starting earlier and earlier. Seemingly leading the way for the 2016 MBA application season is Columbia Business School, which today is holding a virtual information session for its 2016 J-term applicants and will be posting its 2016 J-term application on May 1. We'll include a link in the show notes at info.accepted.com/99 to the virtual session registration for those of you who catch the podcast early in the day. And once the recording of the virtual session is up, we'll change the link so that those who want to see the virtual session later will be able to do so. Now, the format for today's show is going to be a tad different than most Admissions Straight Talk episodes. I'm going to talk with four admissions officers from the Columbia Business School in this episode of Admissions Straight Talk. My goal is very simple: get the admissions director's perspective on the Columbia MBA experience, the different options that CBS provides, and basically as much valuable information as I can cram into this podcast and get out of our guests. Before turning to my guests, I have one announcement and one reminder. First, the announcement. Next week, and I'm really proud of this, is Admissions Straight Talk's 100th episode. That's very hard for me to believe, but yes, it's true. And for that very special milestone, I'm interviewing John Medved, the well-known entrepreneur and venture capitalist, and an all-round fascinating individual. If you have any interest in running your own business at some point in the future, whatever field you are currently studying, listen in next week. Or better yet, subscribe to Admissions Straight Talk. Links are in the show notes at info.accepted.com/99 so that you ensure you don't miss any future episodes. And we have some great ones coming up. And if you don't see entrepreneurship in your future, listen in anyway, because John is just that intriguing an individual. Second, the reminder, I answer your questions on the show. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/99, and you can leave your question in a comment. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. Oh, and FYI, if you just want to share a thought or concern on the blog, feel free to do that too. We're developing a wonderfully thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to comment there. Now, it gives me great pleasure to introduce today's guest, the Columbia Business School admissions team. Amanda Carlson, Assistant Dean, MBA Admissions. Michael Robinson, Sr., Associate Director of Admissions. Matthew Mall, Associate Director, MBA Admissions. And Dana Cushing, Assistant Director of MBA Admissions. Amanda, Michael, Matthew, and Dana, it's a pleasure having you here today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Linda. Okay. Now, normally, when I have one or two guests, I give a little background about my guests. I look them up, and I get some information. But I want to do something different today. I'd like to ask each of you what specifically you do in admissions, and what do you like best about your roles? And Dana, could you start?
Sure. So I work on our operations team, and I run our interview program, so that means I'm interacting with a lot of applicants one-on-one as well as with a lot of alumni, and that's actually my favorite part of my role. I feel like meeting each applicant and each alum, they're all very unique people, so it's really amazing to be part of a team where we're building a class of so many interesting individuals.
They are interesting individuals, that's for sure. Matthew.
Yes. Hi, Linda, and congratulations on episode 100.
Thank you.
That sounds like you've been working hard on this for a while.
Yeah, it's true, and I'm proud of it.
About 8 years, so I've had the pleasure of working on many sides of the team, but now I am currently on the operations side, so we decide what goes into the application. We make sure the process runs smoothly, that people are getting decisions on time. My favorite part of admissions is really watching us bring in individuals into the class and then see them as their students become a community. I think it's really cool watching that metamorphosis.
That is fascinating.
That's great. And actually, Linda, I'm sorry, it's Amanda. I just want to brag on Matthew for a second. He's also a student in our executive MBA program, and he's just finished the core curriculum. So we are extraordinarily proud of him and excited for him that he's reached that milestone.
That is an important milestone also. Fantastic. Okay, Michael.
Hi, Linda. And again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Admissions now for almost 13 years.
Whoa.
Like a long time, but it, but
is that what you wanted to do when you were a kid growing up? And they ask you, what do you want to do?
No. but sometimes luck smiles on you, and you find the right path. And sometimes accidentally, I think I found the right path. So I'm also a proud Columbia alum. And in terms of the things I like best, I don't want to steal something from Matthew, but like working with the students really is a key part of the experience for me, and I like to watch them change. And in the end, you see them become better professionals and also better people through the experiences here.
Great. And Amanda?
Yep. Michael, you're going to make me cry. So Michael and I have worked together for about 13 years, so I've been here a little bit over 13 years now. And I think Michael had that nice phrase saying that luck smiled on him, and I feel like luck smiled on us here at Columbia, the admissions team. I was thinking about what do I like best about my job, and obviously we love working with candidates, watching them go through the whole process, having them kind of refine what they want to do, and seeing them achieve their goals when they graduate. But in thinking more about it as listening to Dana and Matthew and Michael, I think luck smiled on us here because we work with a great team here. In admissions, we do things as a group, we make decisions as a group, and I think that's making our classes even better as we go forward, making these admissions committee decisions and knowing from the different backgrounds from which people are coming, people have different ideas about what's going to be a great fit here, and each member of our committee, our team, champions different students who are coming in, and I think that's, again, made our team even stronger and made Columbia an even better place. So I think right now, certainly, that's part of my favorite one of my favorite parts about my job. And like everybody else said, congratulations on your 100th episode. That's really exciting for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sounds to me like you have your own mini community within the admissions office there.
We do.
Can one of you give us an overview of the regular two-year Columbia MBA program so listeners who may not be familiar with it can have context for the remainder of the call?
Yep. Okay, so this is Amanda, and I'm going to try to give very high-level perspective, and obviously if anybody else has anything to add, I hope that they'll chime in. But at Columbia, we have two different intakes, and the one that I'm going to talk about first is really our August intake. We have a J-term January start, which we can probably address a little bit later. But the two-year MBA program has about 550 students in it. It starts in August. And for the first semester and a half, our students are taking classes within the core curriculum, which I mentioned a little bit earlier that Matthew just finished. And the core is comprised of classes, the standard classes you would think about in a business school curriculum, leadership, marketing, accounting, statistics, operations, corporate finance. The students in the August intake will go through the core with a group called a cluster, so it's about 60 to 65 students who are basically a microcosm of what the larger class will look like. So they're going to be diverse on any different number of levels, their skills, their ideas, their leadership styles, their professional background, where they're coming from geographically, and so on. Basically, after the students get through that semester and a half of core courses, they will be free to take classes within the elective offerings that we have both at Columbia Business School and across the larger university. At the business school, we have about 200 or so elective classes from which folks can choose, and there are about 4,000 actually electives across the larger university. So if somebody wanted to take a class at the law school, at the public policy school, at the journalism school, medical school, they're more than welcome to do that. Our students don't have to actually choose from any particular area of focus. They can take classes across any elective areas that they want, whether it's real estate, healthcare, entrepreneurship, finance, retail,
and so on. And as part of the August intake, there is an internship component between the 2 years of study. And so many of the students who start in August are really looking to pivot their careers and may look to the internship to kind of provide an opportunity for them to dip a toe into something a little bit different, whether it's a new industry or function or even kind of geographic location. So that's an opportunity that they can pursue between the 2 years of study. But I think really that's kind of it in a nutshell, what the curriculum looks like and what the students who come in the August intake could expect.
Anybody have anything else to add?
I think you
know.
Okay.
Very comprehensive.
So the next question is, what is the J-term option? How is it structured and whom is designed for? Or maybe just how does it differ? That might be just the best question.
Sure. Hey, this is Matthew again. So the January program is different in a couple ways. It's a smaller class. There are about 200 students that come in for the January program, so it's three clusters. And it's a shorter program. So the traditional program is about 20 months. You start in August, you finish the following May. The January program, you start in January, you go 16 consecutive months, and you graduate in May. So it's really geared towards people who aren't looking for that full-time internship that you would have in a traditional
right.
program that starts in the fall. So it is great for people who are entrepreneurs, or they're going to a family business, or they have a really strong network already in a business or an industry that they are already familiar with. So you'll see some people who are sponsored in the program, but also people who have really strong networks in an industry they want to go into. It's really great for people who want to forego that internship, that full-time internship, and get to the workforce much quicker.
Right. Now, you had mentioned that there are about 200 people in the J-term program. Is that in addition to the 550 that Amanda mentioned, so that the total graduating class is 550, or is it 750?
The total graduating class will be 750. So people who start in January essentially catch up to the people who started the August before them.
Okay.
So it becomes like 200 plus the 550.
Are the admissions requirements different for the two programs? Do the applications differ?
So the applications are identical as far as the process and what you would put into your application. The only thing I would suggest to people who are considering both programs would be to speak directly to why January, particularly if you're somebody who's looking to make some kind of career switch, career pivot.
Yeah.
The January program, it is a little more challenging to make those switches without a full-time internship.
Mm-hmm.
Do take on in-semester internships and independent studies and those types of things while they're in the program. But when you're talking in your application about which program, speaking directly to January, I think is probably the only difference in the application process.
Okay.
I agree. I mean, this is Amanda. I think it just provides context for us as we're looking to see how people are making their decisions, and it's really helpful. The more information and the more direct information that people can provide about perhaps why they would want to pursue the January intake as opposed to the August intake. It's helpful for us in our decision-making processes.
And I'd add one thing. This is Michael as well. The class profile within the January class is a bit different. It's more international. It's about 60% international or non-U.S. And we have a higher percentage of entrepreneurs and a growing number of people from family businesses, and they come to get the MBA to kind of take their family business to a new and higher global level.
Yeah, I would assume you have many more entrepreneurs and family business people, and because just, you know, again, you don't need that internship. That would make a lot of sense to me. Any difference in terms of age, or does it tend to be a little bit older, or does that not make a difference?
I mean,
experience level, not age. Sorry.
Technically, if we look at the statistics after the class comes in, they may have like 6-7 months more experience.
All right, so
anybody would. There's no noticeable difference by any means.
No noticeable. What about academic stats that applicants love to quote?
Virtually the same.
Okay. All right. Now, your office recently announced that the J-term app will be released April 23rd, which will be tomorrow by the time the recording is posted. Can you give us a hint as to how it will differ or about new elements in the 2015-16 application for the J-term and the regular two-year MBA?
Yes, I'll take that. This is Michael again.
Okay.
So we've made a number of changes to the 2016 application, and the changes are going to apply to both the January intake and the August intake. So we've tweaked the essays a bit. So essay one is essentially a Why Columbia essay, but the way we reworded the essays, the essay question, we hope to avoid applicants simply restating their professional path, which we already have from the resume and the recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually want the applicants to provide more clarity on their professional goals going forward and how the Columbia MBA can actually help them achieve those goals. So it's more focused on the fit piece as opposed to reciting your resume again.
Got it.
And essay two kind of touches on how the New York location enables us to bridge theory and practice. So we ask applicants to tell us how they'll take advantage of being at the very center of business. Essay three, the text is essentially the same, but we did make a change. So this is our personal essay, and the change that we now link that to CBS Matters, right? And CBS Matters is an initiative which has become a very key element of the culture at Columbia. And that CBS Matters actually allows the people in your cluster to learn more about you on a personal level. And I'm actually stressing the word personal. So we actually asked, what will your cluster mates be pleasantly surprised to learn about you? So when you answer this question, I think it's helpful if the applicant thinks about having a personal conversation with a peer. So it's not the place to write about how you provide more opportunities for other people at work or work very hard. You know, it's not about that. It's more on the personal tip. I mean, actually, before starting this podcast, I actually read an application, and the person actually wrote that essay where it's like, I provide more opportunities to other people, you know, and that wasn't very helpful to it.
No, I can imagine that wasn't terribly helpful. Well, that is wonderful.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
It's very, very nice, yes, of course, and of course, very helpful at work.
Well, all I can say is that your response to my question is much more helpful than that applicant's response to your question.
more changes. So in the short-term goal text box, instead of having 75 characters, you now have 50 characters to answer the question. So
oh, goodness.
Right? You know? And then another change is that, like, to provide more options for our international students, we're now taking the IELTS in addition to the TOEFL as well.
Wonderful. Now, just I noticed while I was preparing that Columbia now offers no cosigner loans for international students through Prodigy Finance. Is that
yes.
Right? That's
yes.
a development this past year, right?
Yes, we had a pilot program this past year with Prodigy.
Mm-hmm. And I assume, are you seeing increased applications from non-U.S. citizens as a result? How is the pilot going?
Yeah, I mean, so we were absolutely thrilled that our pilot program seemed to have paid off, and our international students with no cosigner can apply for tuition and fees through this particular loan program. So we're really excited about it, and it's not going to be a pilot anymore. It's going to be fully rolled out. How has this impacted applications? Look, international applications were up slightly last year.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I know that we've been putting a lot of effort into ensuring that international applicants have opportunity to learn more about Columbia through, like, webinars that we've held.
Right.
I would say roughly we probably offered two per month for at least the past year, maybe even 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
We visited nearly 70 cities across the globe outside of the U.S. And, I mean, I hope that all of this has had a really positive impact on inspiring applications or applicants, rather, to consider Columbia. I'm sure that the Prodigy Finance loan has been helpful, but I can't say there's a direct causality there.
Of course.
But, I mean, we're thrilled, and I'm hoping it's just going to make things easier. We're all hoping that it'll make it easier for folks to be able to get here in the coming years. So we're excited about it. And thank you for sharing with our candidates who may not know about the Prodigy loan.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to mention it, because it's been several years, you know. And I actually hadn't known about it until I was researching today. By the way, for the listeners, we interviewed the head of Prodigy, in episode 89, info.accepted.com/89.
So we hadn't shared much about it because, again, it was a pilot, and we wanted to see how things went, and it went really well, according to our assistant dean of financial aid, Marilena Batulis, who'd been working with Prodigy for a while. And so, again, now we're going to be starting to share a little bit more information about it.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to be part of that sharing.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the different options that – all right, but before we move on, any other anticipated changes to the admissions process for the upcoming application cycle? Interviewing will pretty much stay the same?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I mean, thank you. I mean, Michael, your answer was fantastic. Now, how about early decision and regular decision for the September 2016 start date? Now, maybe you can first talk about – somebody can – just, again, give a brief synopsis. What is the difference between early decision and regular decision? Right. And then anything specifically that – and then I can ask some more questions. How about that?
Okay. So, yes, this is Amanda. And so we have two different periods during which candidates can apply to Columbia for the August intake or for any of our executive MBA programs as well. There's an early decision period and a regular decision period. Early decision is binding, and people will sign, candidates will sign an honor pledge saying, roughly again, something along the lines of, I pledge my honor if I'm admitted to Columbia Business School, then I will withdraw any other applications that I may have submitted and send a deposit in within 2 weeks of being accepted as an early decision candidate. We have rolling admissions here at Columbia, meaning we read applications in the order in which they are submitted. So obviously early decision applications will be read before the regular decision applications. Regular decision is not binding. We expect that people are shopping around and considering what schools are going to be a good fit and submitting a lot of different applications. So basically what this means is if somebody knows that Columbia is really where they have their heart set and they would like to come here, then we would certainly encourage them to apply during the early decision period. Anybody who applies to Columbia will hear from us within 6 weeks as to whether or not they're being interviewed or will be denied. So we do try to have a pretty quick turnaround time. Anybody who is interviewed, we will get them a decision within 2 weeks after the interview feedback is sent to us from alumni who conduct our interviews. So again, we try to have a pretty quick turnaround. And if somebody does apply during the early decision period, they'll probably hear relatively quickly from us. We do receive the bulk of our applications during the regular decision period, and that is when most people are admitted. Trying to think what else would be relevant and helpful here. Early decision is the time, this is when we're putting together kind of the core or the base of the class, and we build from this in regular decision. There's no changes in early decision option this year. I mean, we're still going to try to continue to get folks decisions quickly and hope to process those decisions even faster this year.
Are you specifically looking for anything different with the early decision applicants?
I mean, there's nothing specific that we're looking for in early decision applications. I mean, they tend to be, again, very focused if they know what Columbia has to offer and they're looking to kind of wrap up their business school application process early. That's nice for them, and we're delighted to have them that join us early.
Okay. Now, let's skip ahead a few months or go back to this year's applicants. How is the application processed once it's submitted? What happens?
Sure. This is Dana. I can help with that question.
Okay.
So once an application is submitted and once we start reading an application, the whole process takes about 10 weeks. So as Amanda said, this is a rolling process. We're reading applications in the order we receive them. We're reading early decision in January 1st before we get to regular decision. But once we start reading your application, the whole process is about 10 weeks long. So each applicant who submits, their application is reviewed by several members of our staff for an initial review. This is us getting to know you. This is us getting to know your application. And from those initial reviews, this is where we determine who will be invited to interview. That interview, as we said, takes about 6 weeks to get that notification. If you are invited to interview, you're going to interview with an alum who's located in a city near you. So that means all of these interviews are conducted by alumni. That's great for us because we feel like you get to meet someone new in the, you know, during your process, you get to meet someone who's been through the program. You'll get about a list of 6 names for alumni. You take a look through, you pick the alum you want to meet with, and you reach out to them. Once you've met with that alum and they've submitted their feedback, because they also submit feedback about each applicant, we take their report as well as all of your initial reviews and the entire application. We take all of that information and we present it before a final decision committee. And the committee is comprised of the admissions team, so everyone who's sitting in this room right now, as well as our colleagues. And those meetings are very discussion-oriented. We talk about each aspect of an application and review all of the materials. So ultimately, we come to a consensus in the room about a final decision.
The only thing I'd like to add is that just being on the operations side, we like to move things as quickly as possible. So while the goal is 6 weeks, we tend to be much faster. So that's
something be a little bit less.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We're very
great.
Proud of that. Our goal, we always meet our goal because we move very quickly.
Right. Well, and the other thing is it just depends on the time during the applicant cycle, how quickly we can end up moving. So right around our merit-based fellowship deadline, which often is in January, that's when, within a few weeks of that, is when we'll tend to see the bulk of our applications come in. And so folks may hear from us a little bit closer to 6 weeks, and early on in early decision or January review, for example, they may hear from us within a week or two about being interviewed. A week may be slampish.
Wow. Okay. That's fantastic. It's fantastic turnaround. That's great. All right, now, Columbia and the IRS share a common deadline, April 15th, right? That's your application deadline, and or will it just pass by the time the public, by the time this recording is posted? And I'm guessing you are still interviewing applicants for the 2015 matriculation. What is the purpose of the interview at Columbia?
Sure. This is Dana again. Since I work closely with the interview program and the interviewers, I guess I'll tell you a little bit more about what we're doing.
Okay.
So any
hints or suggestions would probably also be very much appreciated.
Absolutely. So anyone who is interviewed through our process, like I said, they're meeting with an alum. They're meeting with someone who's volunteered their time to get to know, prospective students. So for us, this is a great opportunity for admissions to make sure that we're getting to know each applicant as a person. We're putting a face with a name. We're having a little bit more time with the actual individual as opposed to just their application. So what it is, and I feel like in admissions you hear the word fit come up quite a bit.
Sure.
But for us, this interview is actually a chance for both our team as well as the applicant to determine fit with the school a little bit better. Because the applicant's meeting with someone who's been through the program, they're meeting with someone who can answer their questions through the eyes of a student, and then vice versa. Our ambassadors, we call them ambassadors, our alumni, they are asking questions of these applicants to figure out if this is someone they'd like to have in their alumni network. Is this someone they could work with? Is this someone that they could see on their learning team? So when an applicant's going into these interviews, they want to treat it professionally. They want to treat it like a job interview. But they're going to be meeting with someone who could potentially be their peer. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. Those ambassadors get the applicant's resume, and that's about it. So it's also a chance to really talk about the things that matter to you in your application. Make sure we get to see you in the light that you're excited to show the admissions committee and the alumni. So I think additionally for our team, it's really nice to get another perspective, because a big part of the admissions process is we want to make sure that your application is seen by quite a few different people. We want to get a big group consensus on your decision. And being able to get the perspective of an alum into that mix is really important for us as well. So it's a chance to get to know the applicant just a little bit better through the eyes of a different, a different perspective.
Great. All right. Thank you. Now I have a question for each of you. What do you wish applicants understood better about Columbia Business School or perhaps would consider more in the application process. And this could be a specific program or event or a cultural aspect of life at CBS. And Dana, you want to start again? I seem to be picking on you.
Oh, sure. I actually want to talk about a very specific program that I want all of our applicants to know about.
Okay.
It's our Executive in Residence program. They are... So the Executives in Residence, it's a group of semi-retired or retired executive-level individuals. Some are alums, some aren't, but they've actually all volunteered their time to be part of our community. You know, sometimes they'll guest lecture, but what every single one of them does is they sit down and they have office hours. And it's something that is very unique to our program. It's something that, you know, makes us, I guess, a little bit of who we are. And it's just the access to being able to sit down with someone who's, you know, had a career in something that you're very interested in pursuing and being able to get advice straight from the source. And I think that's part of, you know, what makes us special. And everyone should look at that program.
and if I could build on that a little bit, this is our Michael.
Sure.
Give you one example of an exec in residence. Robert Esner is a former CEO of Wyeth, which, you know, is a multi-billion pharmaceutical firm. So to have someone who ran a multi-billion dollar enterprise and is regarded as a leader within the healthcare space, that just gives you an idea of the caliber of people that we have within the program, and you get these really candid conversations for about 20, 30 minutes with these folks, and you really get a sense of what you need to do if you aspire to becoming a C-suite executive yourself.
Okay, great. Matthew?
I think something that's amazing about our program is the access our students have to real-world experiences. So I think what normally comes to mind is are the internships our students have, but because of where we're located, students are able to also have in-semester internships. They're able to do independent studies with organizations and work directly with professors on something specific for our company. And through the clubs, they're like the management consulting club, you can work with a small business on a real-world business problem. And I think that's something that our students are able to take advantage of in a number of ways, and it's something that I think more people should know about when they're considering schools.
And since we're still plugging the J term, I think we're seeing an increasing number of folks, I don't have the exact figure, but who actually do career switches within the J term, and that's largely due to where we are in New York. And people actually have that possibility to do that in-semester internship, so more and more of them are doing like things part-time and also like 1 month internships during their break as well.
Interesting, because I mean at the beginning of the call, I don't remember if it was Amanda or you, Michael, but one of you said that the J-term is more geared to people who don't need the internship and
yes.
Therefore usually isn't as good at facilitating career change.
Yes, but the thing is, when you think about the MBA, though, I mean, like, you get exposed to so many opportunities. Mm-hmm. So people come in with an idea, with a goal that they think is set in their mind, and we've seen people change their minds so often in the process.
Sure.
So you have this self-discovery and exploration and so on. But the thing is, because we're here in New York City, I mean, you can learn about something but then have an opportunity to actually execute.
Okay. Before we get to Amanda's answer to this question, I just want to mention that we had we interviewed for the blog a current MBA, a second-year student at Columbia, Kendall Miller. And one of the things that she liked best about Columbia was the access, the number and seniority of guest lecturers. So it's not exactly the program that you're talking about, but I think it's the same theme that you're hitting on. Amanda? What about you? How would you answer that?
I guess, you know, hopefully people will come to visit and learn a little bit more about the culture we have here at Columbia of really kind of shared ownership among the students and the faculty and the administration here. And when students see, again, an opportunity to, again, make Columbia really even better, They'll identify those opportunities and work together with the faculty and with the administration to ensure that gets moved forward. So, for example, We have a gender-neutral bathroom, which was opened this year, thanks to a student and a group of students who ended up kind of driving that initiative. We have something called Columbia's Startup Lab, which came out of the Dean's Advisory Group. The students thought, you know, gee, after 2 years, I don't want to be the person who's sitting in my apartment and kind of twiddling my thumbs thinking, I was surrounded by all these people in the library and at school and all these wonderful ideas, and now I'm here after graduation, and where's kind of my community when I need them? And so we've got something called the Startup Lab, which is downtown, and about, I believe, I'm not quite sure the exact number, maybe somebody else here does, but about 75 of our students go and get a spot in the Startup Lab after graduation, and they can be there for work there in a shared working space in a community for a year after graduation. So again, my point about this is there's a culture of shared ownership here at Columbia, and I really hope that people do recognize that. About our students, how motivated, how driven they are, and how inspired they are to move things forward here at Columbia and do so in conjunction with the administration and faculty.
That's great. Well, one thing that occurred to me when we started the call was that you are approaching the call as a group and a team, and that maybe that's somewhat reflective of the community and the community emphasis at Columbia.
Yep.
Yeah, it's anyway, okay. Let's just go back for a moment to the application process and some issues that this year's applicants are probably currently facing and next year's applicants will probably get to. Do you have any suggestions for waitlisted applicants at Columbia?
Sure. This is Dana. I can take that one too. So okay. I'm actually one of our waitlist managers this year. So this
All right.
is something near and dear to me.
Do you like it when applicants email you and call you daily?
So actually, one of the things I wanted to sort of give some advice to applicants is that, you know, regardless of your school, listen to the rules and suggestions of your waitlist process or your waitlist manager.
Right.
Every school is going to be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
For us, for example, you're going to have a waitlist manager. That waitlist manager does want you to reach out to them. Usually, you know, when I'm working with different applicants who are on the wait list, we set up a schedule for, you know, checking in, making sure we're on the same page at all times, and we make sure we stay in contact in a way that's very productive for everyone. So I think the big takeaway is definitely make sure you know how your school likes to run their wait list. Listen to your wait list manager if you have one, and make sure you're both operating on the same page.
All right. Yeah, I think that's great advice. Can you give any tips that are specific to Columbia, or just basically get in touch with your waitlist manager and
touch with your waitlist manager?
Do what your waitlist manager says, right?
Pretty much. I think we do give some specific directions to those who end up on the waitlist, and we make sure to update them as far as timing and what we're expecting. We're actually relatively transparent. Well, we are. We're very transparent with our waitlist candidates, so we make sure they know what's going on, and then we kind of adjust and adapt as our process changes.
This is Amanda, and I just want to add to that. As I mentioned, we really do make decisions by committee, and there are times when we'll just say, okay, you know what, let's have an impromptu waitlist meeting. And so waitlist manager, to manage, that's an active role. And so we may say, we're looking for some people in healthcare right now. Dana, who happens to be on your wait list, who's interested in healthcare, and that's there's a responsibility of the waitlisted candidate, hopefully, to have reached out to Dana to keep her up to date. But also, it's Dana's responsibility as the waitlist manager to ensure that she has the most up-to-date information from the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's why, again, we like to actively manage this entire process, and again, make sure that things are as transparent as possible from our end.
Yeah, for us, it's very much a one-on-one relationship between the candidate and the waitlist manager.
Okay. And what about reapplicants? What should, let's say, I hope nobody, this didn't happen to any listener to Admission Straight Talk, but let's say somebody just got a rejection from Columbia, or they will be getting it in the next few weeks, and they really, really want to go to Columbia. They're dying to go to Columbia. It's their number one, top choice. What should that person do?
Yeah, so this is Amanda, and I really like rehab weekends. I do. You know, I feel that they don't let a little adversity set them back, and I think that they're generally focused and they're committed to the business school process, and oftentimes, you know, they can come back better and stronger in a second year, and I think, again, they're just really resilient. An example, I guess, that I can give to you, which actually might also address something that you'd asked Michael to kind of refine his answer about who's a good fit for the January intake.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy, he'd applied for the August intake, and he's somebody who's a total career switcher. He was working in operations at a hedge fund, and he talked all in his application about how he wanted to go work in something with technology and education. And there was nothing in his application, aside from the fact that his fiance was a teacher, that would demonstrate some kind of real committed interest into education. So we put him on the wait list, and he didn't ultimately make it. He'd applied late. The class was full. But the wait list manager really encouraged him to do a few things, and that was one, to come back for a future term, to demonstrate to us why he would want to make this kind of a career switch, and to kind of also put his money where his mouth is and be like, all right, well, why are you going to continue to work at a hedge fund in operations when this is where your passion lies? So what he did was he actually left his job in June, did a pre-MBA internship. I can't tell you exactly what it was in. I mean, it was something, again, technology education focused. I don't know whether it was with the New York City public school system or a private school. I don't recall off the top of my head what it was. But then he came to us in the J term. So he's somebody who was a career switcher, but he did a pre-MBA internship. And in some ways, he's really kind of going against the grain in terms of he didn't have any competition for other folks who were competing for internships at that time. He was able to get some traction, build some contacts in the area that he wanted to enter, and then was able to do also a school year internship during his third and fourth semester with a charter school. And so, you know, that's just a good example of how, one, a reapplicant can come back even better and stronger, and I guess also kind of tie it into what you and Michael were talking about before, is, okay, well, how could potentially the J term also be an appropriate fit for people who are career switchers?
Got it. Okay.
If you've got any follow-up questions, I'm also happy to answer about that, because I know it can be a little bit confusing as to why we might say, oh, it's for company-sponsored people or family business or entrepreneurial, but there also tend to be quite a few people who do make switches.
Yeah.
Well, would it be fair to say that, in general, the J term is for people who don't need the internship, but if you can see a reasonableness to somebody's choices, you'll still consider it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. We see that all the time.
Yeah. And Amanda, this is Michael again. Amanda mentioned something about shared ownership. I mean, and whether someone is in the J term or the August start, I mean, we want folks to also take ownership for their own career success, right?
Right.
So you have to have an entrepreneurial approach. I mean, that's something that's a core value for us. So it's not necessarily starting your own business, but, like, the thing is, can you create an opportunity for yourself? So one of our favorite recent alums, I mean, was someone who was in the Navy, but started within a J term, but was able to go from the Navy to our value investing program and now runs a fund. You know, so that is not common, right?
Right.
But that was a very special person who was passionate about making a change, had the opportunity here and so on, and made something happen, you know. But again, I mean, he took ownership for success and made something special happen.
Fantastic story. What makes, and this is going to be, again, for each of you, what makes an application jump to the top of the MIT pile for you? Matthew, do you want to start?
Sure. So, I mean, I think in general it's hard to boil things down to something very simple. Like, this one thing stands out. Particularly,
you're not into sound bites, are you?
I'm not.
Okay, go ahead.
But I think what's great is that we are all we all are individuals in the admissions office as well, and we're reading individuals, and we're bringing them to be part of, bringing them in, hopefully to be part of our community. And so I think, for me, what I'm always looking for, and I think this is true for the committee as a whole, we're looking for people who fit. And I think that that authenticity that you see in an application to really understand somebody and see if they fit really is, it's easy to see. It's kind of one of those things that because we've all been doing this so long, we can tell the difference between somebody who's being authentic and someone who is not. Yeah. And so that authenticity and that those genuine applications really stand out most to me.
Yeah, and this is Dana. I just want to tag on to what Matthew was saying. You know, ultimately, this is really a group decision. The whole admissions team is involved in the process. But I think sometimes candidates think we're looking for a certain type of person, and that's really not the case. I think being yourself, being true to yourself, does set your application apart in many ways, if not for the most obvious one, that nobody can really be quite like you.
Right.
Really being yourself does add quite a bit to your application.
Okay.
And for me, I guess, this is Michael. I like to see examples of resilience. I like to see examples of how someone bounced back from a setback or a challenge. I mean, and then in terms of the tone in the applications, in the responses to essays, they take ownership for their success. I mean, and they don't tend to blame other people for setbacks.
Okay, Amanda?
I didn't want to add to what they said. I mean, really, I think
you've had the most time to think about it.
They keep taking what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, there's not one specific quality or characteristic. Again, I like resilience. I like people who, like Michael, overcome adversity. I enjoy people who have that kind of shared ownership mentality and want to contribute to the school. It's not just an I'm coming here to take, but here's also what I'm going to contribute. And for I mean, perhaps for me, that's something that's also really meaningful, and I like to see demonstrated examples of that in people's applications.
Okay.
If I could just add one thing as well, I mean, it just came to me, on that, but I say this all the time. And while this may sound self-serving, the students here, and I mean, and I want people who listen to be cynical, but really come and visit. The kids here, they're nice. You know, I mean, so
that's a tribute to the admissions office.
Well, even beyond admissions, we're very nice too, and we have really cool backgrounds. But the people, I think our students are awesome. And this is not a chest thumping culture. When you look at the folks in the clusters, they have resumes that they could brag about, but you know, they don't feel the need to tell you how wonderful they are, right? I mean, and the culture is supportive and collaborative. You know, so that I like that about us.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, last question. What is the most common mistake you see in MBA applications? Amanda, you want to start? All right, Michael, go ahead.
I will start, though, because I think as admission officers, I think we all have different views on how to kind of answer this question. But kind of building on something that Dina said before, I think there's a subset of the applicant pool that really thinks that this is a marketing exercise. They tend not to be reflective. They tend to overthink the process. And it's like they don't know the culture and community of the school that they're applying to, but they have this preconceived notion of what they think that is, and then they pretend to be something that they're not. And when you're not authentic, you slip, especially when you're being vetted by people who have decades of experience, you know? And more important, when you actually speak with the alumni and current students, I mean, like, you can't fake the funk. That's my part of music days. I apologize for that. Like, I probably baited myself on that, but that's fine. That's fine.
No, I say that all the time, Michael.
Anybody else want to chime in on that one?
I think Michael got that in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was talking to somebody yesterday. This is not exactly what you're talking about in terms of not being himself. But there was a certain inauthenticity to some of what he was saying. And he was just so focused on one statistical flaw in his profile that, and it wasn't even that big a deal, in my opinion, that he was completely forgetting to provide some kind of positive reason for anybody to accept him anywhere. Again, it's not entirely what you're talking about. You're talking about somebody trying to be somebody he's not, and he was probably being very detail-oriented, which is what he is, as opposed to looking at the big picture. So I'm not sure it's the same thing, but he was wishing he was somebody he different than what he was, that's for sure. And I can also tell either when I speak to applicants, or certainly when we're reviewing essays, if and then just coming off as everybody else who's trying to be something they're not. And that's one way to blend in. It's almost a guarantee of blending in. In any case, would you agree?
Yeah, sounds like that's thoughtful feedback. He sounds like he needs a hug, too.
Yeah, really. Anyways, Amanda, Michael, Matthew, and Dana, it's really been delightful chatting with you. I've gone on over, and I don't want to keep you much longer. You've provided me and our listeners with a clear understanding of the Columbia MBA program, both the regular start, the J term, and, of course, what you're looking for in the application. Now, where can a listener learn more about both the J term and the regular start MBA?
Well, you can follow us on Twitter. I run our social media, so that's a good place to start. I try to post as often as possible there. It's at Columbia MBA.
Okay. All right. I think I've encountered you there.
Yes, I favorited some of your tweets. I favorited Kendall's tweet the other day.
Ah, good. Okay. And I'll also find, you know, I'll find the MBA admissions URL, and we'll include links in the show notes at info.exhibit.com/99 to both the Twitter feed and the main website for the CBS admissions team. Okay. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Team CBS Admissions and me for Admissions Straight Talk's 99th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please share your experience via a review on iTunes. Your doing so will help us spread the word about Admissions Straight Talk and grow the program. There is a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. Thanks in advance. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/99 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. Thanks again to Columbia's admissions office for joining me. This is Admissions Straight Talk produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.